Hi, I'm Femi OK. Today on the stream, how is extreme weather changing Pakistan? At the moment, about 33 million people have been impacted by very severe floods during this current monsoon season. More rain is on the way. Earlier, we spoke to Anwar Khan about conditions on the ground.
Over a million people in Pakistan currently do not have shelter. They are sleeping under the sky. Millions more need food parcels, hygiene kits, kitchen sets, and fresh water every day. Many of the roads have been washed away, so the aid is taken in trucks as close as possible. From there, it's transferred to smaller vehicles. From there, it's transferred even to rickshaws, bicycles, whatever. And in other areas, people are wading in water and also using boats when necessary to deliver the aid. It's a logistical nightmare.
So a logistical nightmare for Pakistan right now, but what about managing extreme weather in the future? That is our discussion. You are welcome to it. Our comments section on YouTube is live. Join us. In our conversation today, we have Zain and Salman and Aisha. Zain, welcome to the stream.
Hi, I'm Zain Basravi. I'm Al Jazeera's correspondent reporting on the floods in Pakistan.
Thank you so much. Hello, Salman. Good to have you on the stream. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm Salman Sufi. I'm the head of Prime Minister of Pakistan's strategic reforms.
Good to have you. And Aisha, so good to have you in this particular discussion. Welcome to the stream.
Likewise. Hi, I'm Aisha Siddiqa. I'm a climate and human rights advocate, and I'm a research scholar at the NYU School of Law.
So good to have you. So I am thinking about the pressing needs right now, and the best way to sum up the pressing needs is really to be on the ground, to be amongst the people and see the people. I want to show you a little clip from some reporting that Zain has just been doing. Zain, it is of a woman who is trying to get some food. She has a family to feed. We'll hear more about her in just a moment. And then I'm going to ask you what is going to happen to her. Let's have a look at the clip first of all.
This is the face of hunger in Sindh. To describe what is happening here as desperation trivializes the extent of the suffering. We spoke to Farzana as she was headed into the fray. She says she had no choice.
Our houses have fallen down. We don't have tents. We can't shade our children from the sun. Our houses have been submerged. I swear to God, there is nothing left. All our belongings have been washed away. We're poor. Our children are sick. They are just sitting there.
Zain, what's going to happen to Farzana?
That's a very big question. What's interesting listening to that again is that Farzana, like so many other people, was not from the village that aid drop was meant to be for. She'd come from another village that didn't have enough. And so a lot of the time people are accused of not being as needy as the actual needy people. So when she said, "I swear to God, our houses have fallen down and we need help," what she was saying was meant for the soldiers that were standing next to me to explain to them that they shouldn't be pushing her and other people away because they are just as needy as everybody else. And that's a very common thing here. There isn't enough food to go around. There just isn't. And there's all these big ideas of trying to discuss climate change, of trying to discuss how we take care of the macroeconomic situation. And for people like her, really, it's very basic. It's day to day. They're hungry. They're hungry now, and they need help with their hunger and their thirst. They need clean water. They need shelter to shade themselves from the sun. They need it now. What's going to happen to her is probably more of what you saw. You know, she had five other kids back in the village. The littlest one she had to bring with her because she couldn't leave him behind to take care of himself. And it was really harrowing for us. We were actually there right next to her when she was trying to grab the food. The cameraman who was filming actually tried to stop what he was doing to try to grab the child. And that's when you saw the soldier come in and help her out of the scrum and help her with the bag of goods that she was getting. So it's really hard to say. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, most of the people in her situation are more than likely to face more difficulties before things get better, because there's just not enough food. There's just not enough stuff to go around, and there's just too many people that need help.
So, Zain, that's Zain's reporter's perspective, talking to people, traveling around. Salman, you've also been traveling around with the Prime Minister and seeing the dire need. If so many people are hungry and now they're getting really angry, so hungry and angry and cut off, how do you deal with that? Are you equipped to deal with that?
As you can see on the ground, Pakistan is basically facing a catastrophe of unprecedented, you know, nature. I think this is one of the biggest human tragedies that is occurring in South Asia. And Pakistan has been, like, you know, at the forefront of it. And as far as your question is concerned, we are not equipped as much as, you know, we want to, because this was like just a sudden a monsoon season that just like took everyone by surprise, and because of the climate change that the whole world is facing. But unfortunately, Pakistan, despite contributing very little to the climate crisis in the world, has been at the forefront of this disaster.
If I may, not to interrupt, but I don't think you've answered the question. The question is, how is your government preparing for the future, not what it could have done to prepare for now?
I know I'm getting to that. I'm just trying to explain the situation on the ground. So before I can, complete my answer. As your representative was also saying, there's around a million homes that has been destroyed, and we have around 3,000 miles of roads that have been damaged. So it's very hard for us to reach everywhere, but we are doing the best, that possible that we can do. NDMA and PDMAs of the Pakistan provinces, along with the National Disaster Management Authority, has been doing, maximum efforts that they can. Prime Minister has been visiting himself, making sure that the food, which is available to us, it has been provided to the people who are in need.
That's not entirely true, because if a prime minister cannot even get on the ground to support his people, not even touch the land that he claims to represent with his feet, and throws bags of ration at them, that is not helping in full capacity.
No, I don't. I disagree with that, because Prime Minister has been visiting all the four provinces on a daily basis. He has been reaching wherever he can by air. He has been reaching wherever he can by ground, and wherever he cannot reach.
What's your government's plan after the water dissipates? What's your government's plan for next week?
We are working on four-pronged approach, as I was trying to explain. The rehabilitation is one of them. So once we tackle with the food crisis and we get all the donations that we have been receiving from the world partners, then we're going to be working on rehabilitation and communication, and especially transportation is the number one issue. So as I'm speaking even right now, the power outages that have been in the areas are being fixed. The roads have been constructed, and especially the food supply is trying to be maintained so we can provide food to as many people as possible, because you have to understand
there's no around half a million people. The public of Pakistan cannot even see it. You can say this, I have no reference for this.
Because the situation is unfolding on the ground. You are based in the U.S., so I'm sure when you visit Pakistan, you will be able to see the figures as well. But there's around half a million people in displacement camps. So it's like a huge task. And in any country in this situation would be dealing with the situation as we are right now in Pakistan. And things are going to take time, but things are going to get better.
Aisha, I'm wondering, when somebody says we could not foresee this level of extreme flooding, super flood during monsoon season, as a climate activist, when someone says, I could not foresee this, what is the first thought that comes into your head?
I think that's a pathetic response, especially for a government that fought so hard to be in power. If your country consistently is listed one of the top 10 nations to be affected by climate change, you absolutely need to take that into account. How are you going to govern over a land when it is flooded, when it no longer exists? And the climate change has increased heat waves in Pakistan by threefold, 30%. This government was in power when it was under heat waves. That was unprecedented, but then it had a chance to take appropriate measures. It didn't. And now this is happening, and it has a chance to take appropriate measures, but all we hear are PR statements.
Let me go back to...
I don't think that's accurate. I think that's a very politically charged statement that Ms. Aisha has made. The government came into power in April or May, and the climate change has been happening for far long, from that. No government, even in Pakistan or US or UK, you have seen devastating floods in Europe as well, even Europe as well. And no country has the capacity to deal, especially a country like Pakistan, who is already facing crippling economic issues. And the government is committed and is actually working nonstop around the clock in Pakistan to make sure that people who are, affected get the help they need.
All right. So Salman and Aisha, I'm going to allow some of our audience who are watching on YouTube to come in here. Zain, stand by. I'm going to put these questions to you. I'm going to give you a couple because of the delay that we have between me and then hearing you. So on YouTube, I've got Faisal saying, when it comes to government relief and rehabilitation, there's a concern about Pakistan's present government. It is in shambles. That's one thought, Zain. Let me give you a second one. This is from Naveed. Most areas affected by the floods are still inaccessible because there's been damage to the infrastructure. Zain, can you help me out on those two questions coming from our audience?
Sure. So I'll address the first question by sort of talking about what the other two guests were saying. As everything in Pakistan tends to be, everything becomes very politicized. But I can tell you on the ground right now, nobody cares about the politics of any party. Those that are displaced by these floods, the people that have been, whose homes have been swept away and completely destroyed, who are hungry right now, who haven't eaten in several days, some of them haven't eaten properly in a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, they don't care about anyone's politics. And as an example of that, we were in Balochistan province earlier today, and we met person after person in a village called Dera Alayar and in Jafarabad district. And what people kept saying there is that we're hungry. The trickle-down system of aid that goes from federal to provincial to municipal to the feudal lords to local leaders to the people, that isn't trickling down at all or fast enough. They blamed corruption, they blamed favoritism, they blamed not enough aid to go around. There's disparity literally so people are on the sides of the road. Half of the road that is filled with newly homeless people will have blue tents sent in from China, and then the other half will not. And the reason for that is because they only wrote down 100 names to distribute that day, and the bureaucracy doesn't allow for any more aid distribution. The people that need the help don't care about any political party. One guy even said that please tell the international donors not to donate to the people, donate directly to the army, they will give it to us. Now, the politics of that, there's a long history there, there's a lot of problems, but what people are doing now is looking to the strongest, most well-resourced institution to help them because there is a deep loss of trust in the political system, in their civilian leaders, and you'll find someone to blame any political party, no matter who they are. Right now, the flood is washing over all political boundaries and affecting everyone, and the level of impatience is growing. As far as infrastructure, absolutely. Roads are gone, rail lines are gone. People are operating boats in what were farm fields that have 10 feet of water in them to try to get to villages, to shuttle people back and forth for medical treatment, to rescue pregnant women and take them to the hospital. So infrastructure is a serious problem. Helicopters can only fly so far, and then doing sorties of food drops, it's not working. We've seen problems with that, where food aid isn't being delivered properly. And this is where, the military is very good at being a military, but when it comes to humanitarian relief, they need more civilian support, and there isn't that level of infrastructure to help them deal with what is truly a civilian matter. But they are the most well-resourced, strongest institution in the country, and people are turning to them to expect them to help. But how far they can help, they're limited in what they can do as well. So infrastructure is definitely a problem. Roads have been swept away. And again, there's not enough space to house people, and there's not enough food to go around.
So we have two issues here, multiple issues, but two big problems, challenges. One is right now, looking after people right now, flood survivors right now, and then preparing for the future. Now, you may remember that Zain mentioned a place that he's just been earlier on today called Jacobabad. And I want to show you, in Pakistan, it was the hottest place in the country just a few weeks ago. So I'm just looking up the temperature here because it was hard for me to believe. 51 Celsius, 121 Fahrenheit. So you go from extreme heat. Let me show you the pictures here. From extreme heat to flooding. Let me show you the pictures. Go ahead. All right, let's have a look here. So what you go from in May is the heat wave in May with those extreme temperatures. And then in late August, we have flooding. This is going to be not an extraordinary situation. It's going to be a regular situation. Earlier on, we spoke to Sheri Rehman. She is the Federal Minister for Climate Change for Pakistan. This is what she told us.
If GHG emissions are not reduced, global warming will not change. In Pakistan, as we build back, we surely need to adapt better in many places for climate resilience. But at the same time, unless other countries reduce their emissions, as promised in previous COP events, climate disasters will hit frontline countries like Pakistan with increasing magnitude. The time to change that is now.
Salman, I haven't seen other countries rallying around, helping for aid, yes, but not thinking about the future and not maybe looking at greenhouse gases or GHG, as Sheri Rehman said just a little bit earlier. They're not looking at the root cause. They're trying to put a Band-Aid on the wound. Salman.
Yes, absolutely. You know, as a matter of fact, Pakistan's carbon footprint is only 0.5 to 0.1%. But the response of, global, climate change that Pakistan has been receiving, as you rightly mentioned, the heat wave, and even Pakistan is ranked 18 out of 191 countries in informed risk index. So that's like a big implication on Pakistan's economy, Pakistan's food security. And I would like to add, I think there was one point that was very rightly mentioned by your representative on the ground, that just today, there was an amount for 28 billion rupees that was earmarked for the flood effectees, but that has been enhanced to 70 billion today. And this is exactly what we are working with international organizations and international donors with, that let's not put Band-Aid on the situation like tents and food and all of that helps. But what we really need help is in building infrastructure and especially helping us with food security and especially developing those policies which can help countries like Pakistan, because today is Pakistan, tomorrow it can be any other country in the neighborhood. But those countries, those big countries who are responsible for the most damage to climate change, they must assist countries like Pakistan in developing those policies which can ensure that Pakistan does not face this kind of a calamity again, because we are economically not that strong. And I would even urge through your program that the countries should contribute into the BIS program, because that is earmarked just for the flood effectees going forward from today. And 70 billion has been given from the Pakistan government, but the more we have, the more we'll be able to disperse to the flood effectees, and especially by developing and making the homes for people who have lost their homes by those materials which are easily available and which can be constructed rather than brick and mortar. So that is our number one concern, and especially, as a grain, wheat is our main issue right now, because most of the land which is underwater. I'm sorry?
All right. Zain, go ahead.
If I could, those sound like really good, big, important, big ideas, but I can't put a fine enough point on this. It doesn't help anyone discussing those things now, because the people we've spoken to, they're literally surviving day to day, in some cases one meal to the next within a span of a few hours. Right now, discussing new policy, big infrastructural changes, all of this very big, top-heavy bureaucratic stuff is not saving lives. Right now, there are serious considerations,
serious threats to
the people who are all over Sindh and Balochistan and all over the country, literally living in camps and on the sides of the road. I'd like to give you an example, if I could. I'd like to give you an example of how at risk a lot of these people are. They need immediate help. They need security. They need food banks. They need in closed tent cities with actual security. We met a mother in Balochistan sitting on a four-post rope bed in front of a tent on the side of the street. And her husband is like a construction worker, a builder, a laborer. She goes out onto the street begging. And then they sleep out in the open because their mud home was washed away by the floods. At night, a week ago, her three-year-old daughter was taken away from her. She was sleeping, and her daughter was kidnapped because they were out in the open. She said if she had a home to live in, it wouldn't have happened. She doesn't know if someone kidnapped her. That's what she suspects, but she thinks she's a three-year-old. She may have wandered off and fallen into the nearby standing floodwater and drowned, but no bodies have come up yet. And she says she just wants to know what happened. Not knowing is worse than finding her dead body. So there are real risks posed, imminent risks posed to people that are here right now discussing big ideas, perhaps down the line. But right now, they need immediate response.
Salman, hold tight for a moment.
On a massive scale, that's not happening.
Salman, hold tight for a moment because Zain can't hear you because of the movement between where he is and where you are. If I may, I'm just going to push on a little bit because I don't want to get stuck on one point. Zain, you have made that point very clearly. People are hungry and they need to be fed. They need food to get to them. I want to bring in Shozab here, who has an idea of this can't be the status quo. Things have to change. Aisha, will you have a listen to Shozab and then add your thought immediately off the back of it? Here's Shozab.
Given that Pakistan's elites or even the global elite won't be personally affected by these floods in the long term, we can't expect these elites to bring about those fundamental changes, those investments in health, housing, and flood mitigation infrastructure that would lessen the long-term impact of these floods. Those fundamental changes, if they do come, will come from below, from amongst the poor, from amongst progressive forces. And we're already seeing this mobilization from below, with calls for climate reparations, but also with a growing critique amongst the poor of Pakistan's local elites for their enduring disregard for ordinary Pakistani people.
Every time Zain opens his mouth, my heart starts racing because I don't think that Salman even got to the point of how absolutely emotional this is. The entire country and one third of it is underwater and 33 million people are suffering. It is only going to get worse. Scientifically speaking, the water will not evaporate for 2 months. When it does not evaporate, mosquitoes are going to come. That means that there's going to be more malaria, more cholera, more dengue fever. Our healthcare infrastructure is already in ruins. It's going to cause what is already a massive crisis to get into another massive crisis. You began this panel by saying that hungry people get angry. Hungry people are already angry. They're furious. Yes, they don't care who is in power. What they need is immediate relief. And if a minister and somebody who is claiming to represent international relations cannot even give you a plan for next week, that means that we are in a worse situation than we started with. In regards to climate change, yes, it's been going on for a long time, but that also means that it is the responsibility of the government in power to put in plans appropriate enough to combat climate change. The global north has contributed limited funds to the people of Pakistan. That is also a truth. Multiple can exist at the same time. Loss and damage finance was committed in 2009. That is $9 billion a year by the United States and the European nations. They have not come to the people of Pakistan.
Aisha, we are at the end of this show. We are not at the end of this conversation, obviously. There is so much more to talk about.
Salman, I want to
and Zain
add some points
and Aisha. Salman, I don't have points time to allow you to do that, but I want to bring in one more thought here. We will get you back because this is not a 25-minute conversation and then we're done. So I just want to bring in one thought here from Ali. Today it's Pakistan. Tomorrow could be any other nation. Let's all take climate change as a personal responsibility. Every action counts. This conversation is not over. How will Pakistan handle climate change and extreme weather? We will see as we go forward into the future. Thanks for watching. See you next time.